Hello, Bulldogs. Thank you for tuning in to Who's Behind the Bulldog, Arvada High School's community interview podcast series. I'm your host and one of the assistant principals at Arvada, Jeremy Jensen. Each week, I'll sit down with someone from our Arvada community, be it staff, students, families, or other community members, to hear their stories. We'll discuss their histories, successes, challenges, learnings, future hopes and dreams, and much more. I hope you find some connections in their stories and hopefully are inspired to take some time to get to know them a bit better as our school year progresses. We have an amazing community here at Arvada, and I hope we can continue to strengthen that despite the challenges that await us in these unknown times. Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Who's Behind the Bulldog. We have a special episode today, and this is a conversation about supporting ELL students in a remote setting. And this is a conversation that was had on Friday, 4th of December, with all of the ELL teachers and a few staff members as well. Hopefully you guys enjoy this conversation and pick up some great tips and tricks about supporting ELL students remotely. Thanks, everybody. When we were first remote, it was like, what do people need right now? And the ESL question came up quite a bit. And it was like, I just thought it would be helpful to kind of hear. Also, when I talked with Jasmine and Gina, I heard some really good things coming out of the ESL classrooms, some of the Lit Excel classrooms. So I wanted to kind of hear some suggestions or some advice that you guys have that other people might be able to also take advantage of.
And so we can go ahead and just have the conversation. And so Hannah, maybe.
I guess my thing is that I get a lot of kind of head nods and it feels like they understand what I'm talking with them about. Then, you know, when they go and work on work independently, and this is all students, but I guess I've seen it more with students that I know are still learning English. There's like a disconnect there, right? And so like we talk about it and then go back to it and I'm not getting, and when I'm working with them and like checking in with them on assignments and things like that, and I'm like, you know what you need to do? Do you know how to do it? And it's like, yes, I know how to do it. And it still doesn't get done. And so when I go back to them and I'm like, hey, what's going on? What's happening with this? It's like, I don't know that I'm asking the right questions. And when understanding it and then understanding it enough to do it seem to be maybe two different things. You know, I think students are struggling with like understanding and feeling overwhelmed with everything. But then when you add language to that, I just, and especially some of the things that I've seen that are, it's kind of ambiguous directions. And I'm like, you know, as a person who wasn't in the class and trying to understand what's going on, I'm having trouble with it too. And so I'm like, oh no, if you are still learning the language, there's no, you have no idea. I'm just trying to figure out ways to increase work production by helping students understand more explicitly and tangibly what they need to do.
It's interesting you say that, because I've had even last week a similar experience, even after doing this for a long time with my lower level group. Sometimes, you know, you have two or three kids that do understand well. And so kind of when you ask the group, those kids will speak out, and then you get the impression that, okay, there's a couple kids that get it. And so you perceive it as like, okay, yeah, they're getting it. We're moving forward. But then I started like making a breakout room to where I just go with one individual student. And then I'll kind of ask them to explain what's going on. And all of a sudden I realized like my perception of them understanding it was way off. You know, maybe they can't articulate it. Maybe they do understand it and they can't articulate it. But at the same time, I've found that taking them individually, it eliminates the fear of everybody else thinking that they're stupid if they can't explain it. And you can get a much better sense of exactly where they're at. But if they're in front of the whole group, they are going to be very reluctant to volunteer. Like, I don't get it. Point, you know, talk to me, embarrass me in front of everybody. And so I think that's a big thing, is just getting them away, especially if they're in a mainstream class, you know, they're just going to say they understand for fear of being called out in front of everybody and looking stupid. So that's a suggestion I have for people, is just go individually and see what they can understand in that way rather than in front of the whole group.
I can piggyback off that, Joel, too. And just one thing that's worked for me is after we, typically this is what I used to do. I used to give directions and, you know, go over stuff, model, think it's all good. And then I would ask, does anybody have any questions? And now I don't do it that way anymore. Instead, I go kind of like Joel's saying, one-on-one is best, but start with the whole group and say, so who can tell me what's the first step? Okay. And then, you know, you can see, do they even get the first step? And then call in somebody else. What's the second step? What are we going to do next? And then what comes after that? So it gets them telling you rather than you asking, do you have any questions? Because they might not know what questions to ask because they might be so lost. So that's just a simple strategy.
Question for you guys, like when things went remote or even from the springtime, what has the district been providing as like any sort of like additional sort of guidance or supports? Has anything come down the pike in the ESL world lately that the district is sort of promoting?
Basically, they've been directing us to the ed tech resources, the district-wide things. So if, you know, for instance, if we need help with contacting families, they basically have been directing us to those district-wide resources that are for everybody when we're working in the remote environment. Otherwise, we haven't had specific directions or discussions about how that would need to happen for English language learners differently, right? It's use the platforms that you have. You know, I know that one of the challenges that we have here at Arvada is because we have Echo, we are not using the Google Meets platform as much as we're using Zoom. And so sometimes the interactions between those district-wide supports and utilizations, Google Classroom versus Echo and Google Meets instead of Zoom and so forth, that's one big difference that our kids have from other things. And it's proven a little bit problematic with the Newcomer Academy classes that we have, where we have a handful of kids that are taking American history through the Newcomer Academy, but they must go into Google Classroom, which they're not familiar with, and they also have to use Google Meets with those teachers. So we're, you know, there's some of that sort of tension, I guess you would say, between district-wide stuff and what our expectations are at Arvada. Well, one of the things that we wanted to kind of raise, we were brainstorming some ideas or things that we thought were proving problematic for our ELLs in the remote environment. And so we came up with a whole list of things that we thought we could mention or discuss. But from my mind, when I looked over the list, there were a couple of things that basically sorted themselves out into the difference between input and output. And so input is what information we're giving the students, whether that be verbally or in writing, and asking them to process. And then output is the expectation on what they can produce and what scaffolds do they need to be able to do an adequate job of proving their knowledge in that content area. And so we had talked about one of the key things is pacing with regard to the input that we're giving students. And I know that Joel has a lot of ideas around things that we can do, but I'm gonna share in the chat box with you a link to a Google Doc that we created that has some examples and supports. So one second, I'll do that. Joel, do you want to speak to those things?
Sure. I'm looking at that document. Let me make sure I'm not.
Okay, so I put that in the chat. And of course, you know, all of these ideas are underpinned by the concern that we have roughly 59% of our English learners as of this week who currently have two or more Fs in their content areas. And so we're trying to say what is interfering with their success in the remote environment, right? Why is 60%-ish of our kids struggling so much in this arena? So go for it, Joel.
So I think one of the biggest things is limiting how much work they're given. I think that they just have so many things, and then they don't know where to start, and then they get overwhelmed, and then they give up. And so they really need kind of bite-sized pieces. I think teachers need to understand that it takes them 10 times as long to do a simple assignment as it does for a mainstream kid. Like, they're literally like two-year-olds as far as language development is concerned. Whereas with your regular class, you might give three or four things to grade a day. I think a lot of teachers just try to give the same assignment to everyone, but it's okay to give them a lot less. And also, you know, you can make them responsible for it. And it's not ideal. I know that teachers, like, you know, they're not reaching the objectives that I'm setting, and I'm lowering the bar, but there's an argument to be made for having them understand one piece of the assignment well, rather than just copying through, you know, 10 different things. And that's what I've been particularly frustrated with over the years at Arvada. Like, I just see kids constantly copying, like, that's their go-to. And then they get in that habit, and they're not really learning anything. They're just trying to survive and get through all the work that the teacher's doing. And so this year especially, I've just been slowing down, and you guys weren't all on here before, but I was talking with Hannah that it really helps to go one-on-one with students in a chat room, in a breakout room, and get them to explain what the steps are. Because a lot of times, if you ask if they understand, they'll just say yes, because they're afraid to speak out. But and this is so tough with, you know, if you've got a huge class, to take this extra time. But I think teachers really need to slow down a ton and kind of filter out what are the most important parts of their lesson for that week. And although it seems like extra work for the teachers, like, oh, I, you know, I've got 30 kids, I don't have time to make extra work for these students. But really, all that extra work is like boiling what your main point is for that week into two or three sentences. And so I think that's actually helpful for teachers. Like, okay, what is it that I'm really trying to say for this week? You can make students responsible for just that little chunk. And it seems like nothing, but that's a big deal for these kids. Like, on these NEP kids, like, we're doing stories that are like 200 words long, and it's really to the level of, like, there is a girl, and then you ask them a question like, is there a girl? it's more simple than you can possibly imagine. And then, like, that's hard. They're like, wait, what? Is there a girl? And then, like, oh, yes. And then you're like, is there a boy? And then there's a pause. It's really, like, so much simpler than you can imagine. Everything needs to be boiled down to two or three sentences, and then make them responsible for that rather than 50 different things that the mainstream kids are doing.
And that's why we put the federal law and the case law up above in this, in the document that I shared with you, is, you know, in particular, the case of Lau versus Nichols says that giving them the same as everyone else is not fair. The sink or swim notion doesn't work. And we, as an organization that receives federal dollars, we can lose those federal dollars if that is the method that we are employing of helping ELLs. Just giving them the same information that we give to everybody else is not cutting it. And if we were ever audited, we would be in big trouble because we need to do it different. We need to make it comprehensible.
I think one of the things I do sometimes that I fall into the trap is that to explain it better, I use more words.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I guess I need to get more in the habit of kind of being more intentional about the words I use.
Yeah.
Because
and the next portion of what we say on this document of sipping from the fire hose in the remote learning environment, when I'm joining Zooms across the school, because I've been doing that as I'm trying to help kids. One of the things that I'm noticing is that teachers talk for most of the 35 or 40 minutes. That it's just teacher talk and kids are silent. And the problem is that's like trying to take a sip of water out of a fire hose on full blast. The ELLs, I would say 95% of what they're hearing goes in one ear and out the other. So we need to reduce the patter, the inside jokes, the slang, the, you know, the current cultural references and so forth, and just keep it down to the essentials. Like Joel was saying, bullet or simplified content is fine. And it's actually going to be more intelligible, especially if we take the time to pause, right? That's the most important thing that we can do. And Hannah, your comment from the student, I think the section that says use digital check-ins or chat or Zoom reaction buttons to check for understanding is one way that we can make sure that kids are getting it, rather than just asking them to unmute and talk, because it's terrifying to try to talk in front of native English speakers. Right? It's scary. If you provide some written directions, not just oral, but provide something in writing, and it's important that that be shared with the kids. So it should be directions on the document or directions that are in a bunch of slides or something like that, so that they can focus on something that they can, oh, okay, this is what I have to do, right? Or in the agenda.
I was just imagining like a mainstream teacher trying to implement some of those things that you said, Mary, like not using the inside jokes and slowing down and boiling it down. But with a larger class, I can understand like that's gotta be so hard. You gotta keep the whole class going. And I was gonna add like having something written helps a lot, but it might be great in a Zoom room to have that succinct summary and send a private message to those students that are lower level of just the bare bones of what they're talking about. And then if they need to, they can throw it into Google Translate, and then they're not called out in front of everybody.
It's a great idea.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to add too, I think, just speaking for myself as a ex-classroom teacher, I did that for so long. It is overwhelming, like you're saying. I mean, trying to think of how do you implement all these strategies? That being said, I think we need to think not just about our NEP students, but about our LEP students. And they're in these huge humanities classes, for example. I'm just thinking of that because that's where I co-teach. And I used to do this before I was trained as an ELL teacher, that I'll speak for myself. I would assume that they understood more than they really did. Because by the time they're LEP, they've got that social language. You talk to them, a lot of times teachers, myself included, would think, well, they're not, how could they be an ELL? Listen to them talk. They get it. They understand everything I'm saying, but it's that academic language in our content classes that is such a struggle for them. So I think about all these strategies that everybody's saying, and I feel like we need to stress the importance of, if the student is an ELL, they need every single one of these, no matter what their level is, in some fashion, to support that academic language and understanding. So that's just my two cents worth from the LEP land.
Yeah, and obviously this is not about, we want you to be, have a master's degree in ESL by tomorrow, right? But it is why the Colorado Department of Education has put in a requirement that all teachers in their relicensure in the next 5 years are supposed to be getting those 45 hours of culturally and linguistically diverse education credits. So that we can ensure that people have a basic understanding of what is the impact of second language acquisition on content area learning. And so if anybody wants that information about how do I get those credits, I'm happy to provide that. But these are the basic standards and things that we have to be doing in order to make things comprehensible. So. In the document that I shared with you, there are a bunch of examples of how we can provide scaffolds, and I don't want to just read those to you, but I wanted to mention to you that these are all documents, with one exception, these are all documents that have been created for classes here at Arvada. These are not things that were just pulled off of the internet, except for the Bill of Rights illustration. And the only reason that that's in there is because we've actually done that in a government class before, but I didn't have a visual of it. So
yeah, I think I have one somewhere I can try to find.
Yeah, but basically there's illustrations of how to use a graphic organizer rather than close exercises or things of that nature. How to incorporate visuals in your handouts or a word bank, how to provide some exemplars for the students so that they know that here's a sentence frame or here's a paragraph frame that you could use. And then I'm trying to scroll down, how to model for the students so that they can see exactly what it is that you're asking. The trick with modeling is that it has, you have to watch how much talking you are doing versus illustrating on the screen share that you're doing. So, and I know those are really small, but they're screenshots and you can click on them and expand them if you want to see them more closely. The modeling one that Jeremy is showing right now is something that we did, and I think this was in geography studies class. We were talking about the implications of global warming and climate change, and we were trying to help the students to get some sentence frames and use a word bank to talk about the impacts of global warming on, we were talking about South America in particular. And so we provided them with a word bank, we gave them some sentence frames, and we were talking about cause and effect, which is a high school level task, right? That's an appropriate task. And I know people will say, yeah, but there's 25 or 40 other kids in the class who don't need this. Perhaps, but I can guarantee you that every time I have done these sort of models with a small group of kids, there have been other kids who've asked to join. And so it's not just for beginning level ELL and the rest of the class has nothing to do, right? People find this really supportive because there's a lot of kids who have some processing challenges.
I've been trying to think of what's like working well for me and like what problems I've been having. And I honestly think like the biggest problem that I have for remote learning with ELLs is not being able to sit down with them right next to them. And I mean, we can't obviously do that right now. And then I think, you know, putting them in breakout rooms works well. I think it's also like when I do put them in breakout rooms, I think it's also intentional pairing. So I think it's helpful if you pair, like, so I have one Russian student, one Russian girl, she's primarily speaks Russian. And so I try to pair her with other, I want to say girls that are, I know that are empathetic and are able to slow down and try to help. So I think it's also a lot about pairing to help them get to where they need to be. But I don't know. I really have been struggling with this.
When you say that you're pairing them up or grouping them with, you know, empathetic classmates, how do you handle that as far as the breakout rooms in Zoom? For example, if you want Elvira or Dasha or one of those guys to be paired up with two other students that you know will be supportive to them, mm-hmm. how do you manage that in breakout rooms? Are you even able to do that in Zoom?
Yes, you can do that. You can intentionally put people in whatever room you want to put them in.
And you do that in advance?
You can't do it in advance. I do it like the moment of.
Okay. In the class. Yeah. That's my biggest challenge with that whole thing is I would like to pair them up with specific people that I know could support them.
Yeah. So yeah, that's like the problem about Zoom. And I think I know Varda had this problem as well. It would be nice if you could like group students up prior and save their groups so that when you come back to Zoom, like the next week or the next day, that you don't have to like go back through and repair. Everyone's already like in their assigned group.
I thought you could do that. Yeah. If you just can't use your like, you like make a meeting, right? I did it for my capstone class. It's not like my profile. It's a different link.
What? Will you show me later today?
Sure.
Hannah's nodding as well.
Yeah, I was I thought we could do that.
Well, I guess you can't do it on here, but.
Because Jeremy does that for meetings, don't you?
You can do it ahead of time. You can do it ahead of time. I tried it once and it didn't work. It failed on me. I think I'd have to play around with it more, but as long as the email is the right email that you're using, because I thought I was using everybody's jeffco@jeffcoschools.us email, and it only two people wound up going into a breakout room when I started it. So I was like, great.
Yeah, I do remember you had to type in all their emails. Mm-hmm. That was kind of a pain.
And it was easy because I had all their emails saved in that giant document that the staff has, you know, like their assignments for all their things, and their emails are in there. So I thought I did it in like 10 seconds, and then it wound up not working. So I would have to play around with it more. So I've just been doing it manually when it comes to like intentional things.
Okay, but so maybe it's not worth trying that yet.
It's particularly problematic to me because one of the most important things that I do in the classroom with kids is I'm very careful about the ways that I flexibly group kids, who I put them with for what purpose. And in Zoom, I just don't find that to be easy. Random is about the only thing I can get done fairly quickly. And so that would be my big complaint about Zoom, is that we can't do that better.
Yeah, the thing with it, I've done it before. If people don't show up, it's really hard then to reshuffle groups. And so if my anchor for a group isn't there and I need to put them in other places, it becomes like, it's pretty complicated then.
Yeah. So Kayla, tell us about your concerns or wonderings. What's lingering there for you, or what thoughts do you have about what we've shared?
I don't face the same challenges as I think a lot of the teachers do with the ESL students. I mainly wanted to come in and listen to what were some of the strategies that we can implement, because I like to, well, first of all, this whole remote thing is insane. So then I have to do so many different things to try to engage and try to do for all my classes. So I thought that maybe listening to your suggestions could help me just overall in all my groups with all my classes. But I mean, I think that these concerns are very legitimate, and I don't have them personally. And I have the few kids that I have ESL that I've tried to help, I know they struggle very much. Because I've, Leslie and Jessica, and sometimes Noe as well, I've been trying to help them with other classes, and they just, it's a fact. I mean, they're just completely lost. It's just so much. I mean, they get readings that are pages long, and, you know, not even a little, like a small page. You know, there's 3 pages long that they have to read, and then they have to do 2 assignments on it. And it's too much. But I just wanted to jump in and see if I could learn some new stuff to support my classes altogether. I was thinking about this when I was listening to you guys, and I think that the videos that I've seen Joel make for the ESL kids, if you could put those, or if you could share those with the whole staff, because I think that a lot of the times when we hear these concerns, but then we don't have an example of what it looks like in the class, it's a little bit hard to kind of connect the two. But I've seen some of the videos that Joel has done for the ESL kids, and how like the pacing is very slow, and just the words that he uses. And if you can share that with the whole staff, for the teachers that would need to see that example, I think that that would be great. And I'm sure Darcy and Carolyn probably have some videos or some strategies too. But if we can see it in action, I think it would be more helpful for everybody.
A couple of videos I did were just like teaching kids how to submit a Google Doc on Zoom. Is that what you're talking about, Kayla?
I was mainly talking about how you do the screencast castify with just explaining the reading, the TPRS reading, and just kind of how you make a long pause and then you ask the question and then you kind of wait for them to answer on their own and things like that.
Okay.
It's just the pacing is so slow for a regular, you know, for just when we regularly teach, that I think that just looking at that and seeing that example of how different it is from ESL, for ESL sheltered class to just a regular class, I think it's really good to just see that.
So one of the things that I would like to try to do this year is to create an ESL website that would have things for the students and things that would have things for parents and things for teachers. And I would love it if we could put some of those things that you're talking about in the page for teachers, like how to model this, or how to do a screencastify for ELLs that incorporate some of these tactics. It's a dream. I haven't even really gotten it started yet, other than just to start a framework. But I would really love it if we could do that, because it's nice if it's asynchronous enough that people can just come in and click on it and go, oh, that's what you're talking about, right?
I think that's a really fantastic idea, Mary, and I'm happy to help. When we were doing my last school, when we were doing our capstone stuff there, we had all the students maintain their own Google website. And so I could help you get it started and set up with Google. And it's they've enhanced their Google sites since then. And it's even more customizable and even more user-friendly than it was 3 years ago. But I'm happy to help get something set up, and I can even use this document as a starting space to like help like do some organization and rough things. If you tell me what you want, I can start up with some like shells and spaces for you to make it visual.
Yeah, one of the things that that Hannah was asking for earlier this year was for parents, and there are things related specifically to Echo and the technology that we use here at Arvada that are not happening district wide. And mm-hmm. You know, like how do parents look at grades in Echo? How do you log in and having it in various languages, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And having those sorts of things. It takes a little bit of time to pull all of that together, but it would be, I think it would be a real benefit for our families.
Mm-hmm. I did have a question. In the documents that you have, which is, did you guys just put this together this week?
Yeah, I started it on Monday.
Wow, that's very impressive, Mary. You guys didn't have to put this all together. This is, but it's awesome. It's great. There's so many good things in here. The site, I don't know if, I can't remember, you guys didn't say too much about this Colerain, Colorado site?
Colerain, Colorado, yeah.
Colerain, yep.
Mm-hmm. It's a great website. Yeah, it's basically, it's a resource for people in the state of Colorado for working with ELLs and bilingual students. And they have all sorts of resources that you can find in there. And that is linked in the top line of the document that I sent you that says remote learning. Parentheses RL. So, and there you can search around within that website, but they have great stuff about how to help ELLs. There's a tad bit of an elementary focus there, but the concepts are great for everything. I also linked in there information about the federal laws and a couple of other live things that you can click on if you want to. But yeah, there's
Is great there- research. There. Is it just because of the companies from Colorado that they call it Colorado, or is there something specific that makes this unique to Colorado bilingual learners?
Colorado in Spanish has a couple of different meanings, right? So it means like the color red, but it also is the name of our state. And I don't know particularly where the name of the website comes from. For that sort of thing, but
I don't think it's a Colorado company. At least when I was first introduced to it, I would have to look it up. But yeah, I don't think it is.
At first glance, it doesn't seem Colorado specific. It seems just like good practice, bilingual specific, mm-hmm. or not specific.
Colorín Colorado is a phrase that I remember this when I was going to school in Mexico. It's like a phrase when you end a story. Colorín colorado, and then you say este cuento se ha acabado. So then it's kind of like a phrase that you say right before you finish a story. I remember that from elementary school. So I think it's more of an idiom.
And that's the end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is good.
Yeah.
Thank you guys. This is really great. And unless there's anything else that you guys have to, any more questions do you guys have? But
the only other thing I would say is anytime you need or want more information about any of the things that we've talked about today, or if you have resources, please share them with us and we'll make sure that they get shared with the rest of the staff so that those things are available too.
Awesome.
I just want to put in a last plug for Talking Points. I know we're talking about reaching students in the classroom, but Talking Points, that texting app is amazing. It's so easy to use. And I think, honestly, it affects students in the classroom more than we think. So for instance, I mean, I text parents all the time. If it's the good, the bad, the concerns, hey, I haven't seen, you know, your child in class. Are they having trouble? Is there something I can do to help? And it's been an incredible tool for me because sadly, I'm not bilingual. And even if I were, I couldn't speak all the languages that are represented in our school. And so Talking Points has over 100 languages, super easy to use. You don't have to use your cell phone. You can do it through your computer, which is what I do. It's wonderful. And parents have thanked me profusely for using it. So just want to put that plug in.
I've had a lot of success this week and the week before Thanksgiving, just calling them. So I'll call their parents and just say, is there a cell phone number that I could, you know, contact your child with? And I'm worried about their grades or whatever. And And I've had some really great conversations with kids who have been very disengaged this year. And you know, coming to find out real things that are happening in their lives that are keeping them from being successful. It doesn't really have a lot to do with language. Has everything to do with survival during the pandemic. It has everything to do with connections and resources and financial struggles that the kids are having. So it's been really, it's just been a really great thing to do. And I just call them from my cell phone and use *67 because, you know, and they somehow they just pick up. So it's amazing. So anyway, thank you all for being on with us today.
Thanks. Thank you guys. That was really, really great stuff. And thank you guys for your time. And it was great. We'll try to get this information out so more people can access it.
Thank you all for tuning into today's podcast. I want to encourage you to take a minute to reach out to today's guest and make a personal connection. Until next time, this has been Jeremy Jensen with Who's Behind the Bulldog?